Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you guys about betonline.ag. We are down to the final 8 teams in the basketball playoffs. Now at BetOnline Sportsbook, Denver and Boston, still heavy favorites to meet in the finals. However, I've got a sneaky suspicion about taking a flyer on Oklahoma City, the basketball darlings of New York, even a flyer on Indiana to possibly upset the apple cart and maybe, just maybe, go on a run to a Western or Eastern Conference championship. It's long odds. Take a flyer on all three. Maybe one of them cashes and you can make your money back. You can also pick up a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, when you use the link in the description to this episode. Bet online, where the game starts. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or good night. However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping on into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy podcast, live on the BLEAV Podcast Network. Except it isn't live because it is, as always, a podcast. And podcasts aren't live. It's the whole purpose of this podcasting medium that we use. You can listen however and whenever it is that you so choose. And we appreciate that you have decided to stop in however and whenever you may be listening. It is Wednesday, May 15th, according to my count. It may not be that according to your count, but we appreciate you stopping in however and whenever you may be listening. Let's talk NBA playoffs here today on the show. I figured the best way to do this podcasting breakdown over the next 2 days, because we have an episode Wednesday and an episode Thursday, based on my schedule, based on the timeline of events, I felt the best way to break down these series in the NBA playoffs as we head into what might be the most basketball intensive 3 to 4 days of the year. And the reason I say that is not because there is a championship at stake. It's that there's four series that are all going into games 5, 6, and 7. And in three of the four series, you're guaranteed at least 6 games. Because you have 2-2 in both of the Western Conference playoff series. Minnesota and Denver Game 5 is being played Tuesday night. We're recording this Tuesday at 3:30 Pacific time, an hour before Caitlin Clark's WNBA debut that I definitely want to go watch instead of recording this Take It Easy podcast. We have Game 5 OKC-Dallas, a series that I'm just going to continue to say I just have gotten wrong at every turn, but I'm going to stick to the original prognostication of Oklahoma City is going to win the series, because changing your pick halfway through a series or changing your analysis halfway through a series is a great way to be wrong multiple times. I saw a whole lot of people do that with that Minnesota-Denver series, where Minnesota went up 2-0 and kicked Denver's ass, and everyone was quick to prognosticate that Minnesota was going to win that series in a sweep or 5 games after those same people picked Denver to win at the start of the series. And now those people get to be wrong twice because they originally had Denver in 5 or 6, then switched to Minnesota in 5 or 6, and now they get to be wrong twice because Denver is going to win that series in 6, and if they had just stuck to their original prognostication, it would have came true, even if it was a very weird way to get there. Like, I watched all of that Game 4 Sunday between Minnesota and Denver. That was the most normal game in the entire series, and it still had Denver scoring 8 points in the final 15 seconds of the first half, with Jamal Murray hitting a 53-foot fadeaway half-court or three-quarters of the court shot, falling out of bounds, which they showed was the longest shot Jamal Murray had hit all season by 17 feet, and he was falling and fading out of bounds. You had that. You had Rudy Gobert hit the money sign at the referee, which he already got fined $100,000 for earlier in the year, got hit with a second $75,000 fine for hitting the money sign at the referee. That wasn't even the biggest fine we've had in the series, because Jamal Murray got $100,000 for throwing the heating pad and the towel on the court in game two. Again, game four was dumb. But it was also the most normal game of the entire series somehow. And oh, by the way, Anthony Edwards dropped 45 points and won that game. And so now, dropped 45 points and lost that game. So now Minnesota goes back to Denver. Home court is completely gone. And I'm telling you right now, I know where this one's going. Denver is going to win game five. It's going to win game six. Will this be wrong by the time you're listening to this podcast? Absolutely, because game five is tonight in 4 hours. After recording this podcast, and I promise you, I will not go back and edit this podcast in the event that Denver does in fact lose game five to Minnesota, because based on how batshit crazy this entire series has been, would make all the sense in the world for Denver to lose game five against Minnesota. Road team wins every game in the series, and then Minnesota goes back home with a chance to win their fifth playoff series in their entire franchise's history, which is just an incredible sentence to say. The fifth playoff series win in the history of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and second in this year's playoffs. It would be hilarious if that ended up happening. So, OKC Dallas, I've been wrong at every turn about Dallas. I think I've picked every game in the series incorrectly except game one. Like, I thought, okay, OKC is going to win game one. Going into game two, all of the betting lines told you that Dallas was going to win. Like, Vegas was taking 93% of the money line on OKC minus 200 or something like that. And I saw that and I was like, Vegas knows Dallas is going to win that game two. Dallas did win that game two. Dallas won that game three. I thought Dallas was going to win game four. They ultimately lost game four at the very end, and now it's 2-2, and I'm just going to stick to the original prognostication of the Thunder and not change my pick mid-series, because when you change your analysis mid-series, you end up getting it be wrong twice. That's why I didn't change course on Denver. You can go back and listen to Monday's podcast. Promise you, did not change course on Minnesota or Denver, and not changing course on Oklahoma City. Knicks and Pacers. Game five is about to start right now. Both of these teams don't belong here, but the reason the Knicks don't belong here is just specifically injury related. Like, this is the thing that I think has been so funny about the whole load management conversation in the NBA over the last, call it, 4 or 5 years. In the Eastern Conference, since 2000 and... we'll call it 2018. Since 2018, a number one seed has won the Eastern Conference Championship a grand total of zero times. Zero times. 2018, number one seed Raptors lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the second round. 2019, Toronto Raptors, number two seed, won the Eastern Conference by beating number one seed Milwaukee. So 2018, Toronto Raptors losing the second round as number one seed. 2019, Milwaukee Bucks losing the conference championship against Toronto. 2020, Milwaukee Bucks number one seed losing the second round to the Miami Heat, who ultimately go on to the finals. 2021, the number one seed is the Philadelphia 76ers. They lose in the second round against the Atlanta Hawks in what is still the biggest playoff upset in the NBA of the last 10, 15 years. 2022, Miami Heat, number one seed, losing the conference finals to the Boston Celtics. 2023, Milwaukee Bucks losing the first round to the eight-seeded Miami Heat. An Eastern Conference number one seed has not won the conference since 2017. The number one seed in the Western Conference has won the conference three times in that six-year span. Two of those teams went on to win the championship, being the 2020 Lakers and the 2023 Denver Nuggets. But ultimately, number one seed does not necessarily determine future NBA champion. The greater determinant of future NBA champion or even conference champion is star player on your team. Do you have one of those superstar top four players in the league? And over the last 5 years of Eastern Conference basketball, those five teams have been, I'll call it four teams, in order: Miami, Boston, Milwaukee, Philadelphia. Those have been your four best teams in the Eastern Conference since 2019. It's been Miami, three conference championship appearances, two conference championships. Boston, three conference championship appearances, one Eastern Conference championship. Milwaukee, two Eastern Conference finals, 19 and 21, with one conference championship that ultimately led to an NBA finals. And Philadelphia 76ers, never been to the conference finals, but went to three game sevens in round two. Those have been your four best teams consistently for the last 5 years of NBA basketball. It has been Miami, Boston, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia. And this year, once we got to the playoffs, the star players of Miami, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee all got hurt. Jimmy Butler missed the entire series. Joel Embiid was playing through a torn meniscus, Bell's palsy, and a migraine headache injury. And Giannis Antetokounmpo was out with the calf Achilles injury, and Damian Lillard was out with the Achilles injury for half of that second round series. The load management thing actually made sense from the very beginning, because the regular season is not validated enough to give more than even 80% of your effort towards if you're one of those star players. And again, it's a small sample size and everything, but the year that they changed the rules to say you have to play 65% of your games, you have to play 65 games in order to get these awards, and players played, I think it was like 4% or 5% more games across the board than they did in years prior. Even those small adjustments by 5 or 7 games leads to, in the last 2 weeks of the season, Giannis Antetokounmpo suffers a calf injury. Joel Embiid has a major meniscus injury that he plays through. Jimmy Butler has a knee injury that he suffers in the play-in game. Like, all of it leads to that result. And I say all of this to say, the Knicks, the Pacers, and the Cavaliers, teams who all probably should have gotten bounced in the first round under normal circumstances, the Knicks might be a bit of an exception, but all of those teams that should have gotten bounced early in the playoffs, behind Miami, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee, all those teams have advanced to the second round, and now all of those teams are falling apart from injuries. New York Knicks have completely fallen apart. I've been laughing at this so much on the internet over the last couple days, is this idea that Tom Thibodeau, who plays his players 56 minutes per game, is now stunned when every single player on his team is completely falling apart due to injury. OG Anunoby, gone. Dante DiVincenzo playing through injury. Mitchell Robinson, gone due to injury. These teams that happen to outlast Milwaukee, Miami, and Philadelphia, who have been traditionally the four teams that make it to the second round or later in the playoffs over the last 5 years, they outlasted those teams due to injuries, got to the second round, and then all started getting injured themselves. New York completely falling apart due to injury. They've lost Mitchell Robinson. They've lost OG Anunoby. They've lost Dante DiVincenzo has been battling injury. Jalen Brunson had a foot injury. Josh Hart is battling injuries. They don't have many players, and all of them have some sort of injury. The Indiana Pacers, Tyrese Halliburton is out here playing through injury at this point. Nembhard is playing through injury right now. Benedict Mathurin, their star second-year player, he's been out for the entire season with injury at this point. Then you go to Cleveland. Jared Allen got hurt in the first round of their playoff series. Hasn't been back since. And then right before Game 4, the game that is what Cleveland has been building towards over the last few years, Donovan Mitchell is out prior to Game 4, and that just removes every chance they have of winning that game, because even though they kept it within single digits for most of the game with Boston, Darius Garland took 29 shots and scored 30 points. That is a hugely inefficient offense, especially for an offense going up against one of the best teams in the playoffs. And I bring all of this up to say, the teams of the past past 4 to 5 years that have consistently made deep playoff runs, Miami, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, all got bounced in the first round because all of their star players got hurt. New York, Indiana, and Cleveland stepped up in their place with players who are either of the current generation or soon to be stars in the league. I mean, Donovan Mitchell is 27. Jalen Brunson is 27. Tyrese Halliburton is significantly younger. I think he's 24 at this point. But these second-tier teams made the second round of the playoffs for the first time, or in the case of the Knicks, for the second time. And now all of them are getting hurt. And the only thing led as inevitable is Boston. Like, going into these game fives, Boston and Cleveland is the only series that's 3-1. And ultimately, Knicks, Pacers, the duel that they're having that I, you know, if I had a dollar for every time someone brought up the Knicks, Pacers 90s playoff series, I would have a whole lot of cash to be able to do a whole lot of things. As fun as that Knicks-Pacers series has been and chaotic and interesting, it ultimately gets neutered for me a little bit just because of the injury factor at play, where I know the Knicks are completely falling apart by their own doing. Like, Tom Thibodeau's own doing is an explanation for why that's the case. The Knicks are falling apart due to injury. The Pacers would have been bounced if only Damian Lillard had been healthy instead of both him and Giannis going down for the Bucks. And Boston is just an inevitability at this point, because Boston has injuries too in Kristaps Porzingis, and they will also make the finals without Kristaps Porzingis because he is their fifth best player. Kristaps Porzingis is not even their fourth best player like most people have been saying all year. He's their fifth best player. Derek White is their third or fourth best player, and granted, Derek White has played like crap in the last couple games against Cleveland. But you know who played like crap in those first round games against Miami? Drew Holiday. And now Drew Holiday has come out in the Cleveland series and he's stepped up as a number three. And Brown has had 20-point halves and Tatum has had 25-point games because they have the volume of shooting abilities. And when White and Drew Holiday and soon-to-be Porzingis don't have the volume of shooting ability, it doesn't matter. As long as two of them are giving them decent production, there is nothing any of these teams can do, because Cleveland's out here throwing up Darius Garland 29 shots a night. And I'm telling you right now, if you had a draft of every player available in the Boston-Cleveland game on Monday, if you had to draft players one after the other that were available going into that game, you might choose four Boston Celtics before you choose a single Cleveland Cavalier. Like, I'm not kidding. That's how impressive Derek White has been for the Boston Celtics at times during this end of the regular season and into postseason run. The strides that Derek White has made make him not quite an all-star, but in a way that he is probably more valuable to that team as it stands right now than Kristaps Porzingis. And that's crazy to think about. If Kristaps is their number five option and he goes down, and they're still going to waltz into the NBA Finals. Now, they probably are going to need Kristaps against the Denver Nuggets if and when they get to that point in the Finals. But ultimately, a Boston championship feels like an inevitability at this point because they're going to coast into the Finals. And once they get to the Finals, they might get Minnesota or Oklahoma City or Dallas, teams that, again, if you lined up every player in a series between Boston or Minnesota, you're probably picking Tatum and Anthony Edwards, and then three or four Boston Celtics before you get to another Minnesota Timberwolf. Or if you're playing the Thunder, you probably take Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, then Jason Tatum. Actually, let's just say it like this. You take Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and then maybe five Boston Celtics before you get to one Oklahoma City Thunder player. And I'm not saying that's exactly what would happen. I mean, I would probably take Chet Holmgren over Derek White, but you at least have to have the conversation about Chet Holmgren versus Kristaps Porzingis going into that series. And Kristaps Porzingis has been the fifth most valuable player on the Boston Celtics. Again, it's players do different things, and it's not a perfect analogy of drafting players to teams, but it's just so interesting to stop and think about how overwhelming Boston is compared to the entire Eastern Conference. An Eastern Conference in which the six teams trying to nip at Boston's tail have all suffered injuries to star players, every single one. The Miami, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, New York, Indiana, Cleveland, every single one has suffered injuries to star players. And the only inevitability at the very end of it all is, in fact, Boston, who will be in the NBA Finals. I can 100% guarantee this to you. Are you tired or bored of your current NBA team? Have you recently lost a superstar and are now spending years stuck in a rebuild? Are you a Lakers fan who hopped on the bandwagon after the Russell Westbrook trade but are now tired of defending Anthony Davis on Twitter? If you or someone you know is experiencing perpetual mediocrity, then we have a new solution for you. Introducing the new Cleveland Cavaliers. We know it's now been 4 years since LeBron left, and the Cavaliers have had a really poor reputation. But with the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference, and while currently sitting 500, the Cleveland Cavaliers are a perfect option for any new and adopting bandwagoners. Yes, for 20 years, the Cavaliers' strategy was to have the greatest players in the history of basketball be born in the general area of your city, but the Cleveland Cavaliers have pivoted in the last 4 years. We traded Kyrie Irving, who we got with the number one pick in the draft, and basically only got Colin Sexton in return. We then refused to sign Colin Sexton to his rookie extension, only for Sexton to then tear his meniscus in week one. The Cleveland Cavaliers signed Kevin Love to that four-year, $120 million extension, and we still have refused to trade Kevin Love because we are loyal. We know we've drafted in the top five six times in the last 10 seasons, but we've also had more success than 26 other NBA franchises in the last decade. When you join the new Cleveland Cavaliers, some of the perks involved are three fun young rookie stars, the possibility of acquiring Ben Simmons, and no expectations for the 2021-2022 season. That's right. You get all the fun of a team that's allowed to talk shit on Twitter, and none of the expectations of actually winning a playoff series. Remember when we had John Beilein, and he was basically Urban Meyer before Urban Meyer? Neither do we, and we've moved on from this through a pandemic and multiple draft picks to create a new, young core of Darius Garland, Isaac Okoro, and Evan Mobley. For all of you who are big fans of NBA Twitter, we also have wonderful attractions such as Ricky Rubio, Chetty Osman, and the legend, Taco Fall. That's right, Taco Fall plays for the Cavaliers. Bet you didn't know that. Lakers fans, how excited were you when you guys got Russell Westbrook? Well, if you join the new Cleveland Cavaliers in 7 months, you'll get that joy again when we inevitably trade Kevin Love and Colin Sexton to acquire Russell Westbrook in a move of pure desperation. But that's not all, folks. If you sign up in the next 48 hours, you will receive a new Cleveland Cavaliers swag bag, which includes a J.R. Smith tattoo t-shirt, LeBron James's old practice shorts from 2016's championship season, a copy of the Dan Gilbert letter that he sent out after LeBron James decided to join the Miami Heat, 2 complimentary tickets to a Detroit Pistons-Cleveland Cavaliers game worth $6, and Lauri Markkanen. So sign up today for the new and improved Cleveland Cavaliers. All signups for new Cleveland Cavaliers are binding through the 2022-2023 season. All signups must be confirmed before the inevitable New York Knicks play-in game in April. Side effects of new Cleveland Cavaliers include fever, chills, cold sweats, Ben Simmons trade rumors, anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts or actions, diarrhea, constipation, a longing for LeBron James, and the inexplicable urge to acquire Harrison Barnes at the trade deadline. If you or someone you know experiences any of these symptoms, your doctor may prescribe Orlando Magic as an alternative for new Cleveland Cavaliers. All right, real quick before we get out of here, I would like to talk a little bit about the Cleveland Cavaliers. I might not even talk as long as our new Cleveland Cavaliers bit that we did back in 2022. When we made that new Cleveland Cavaliers bit, it was pre-Donovan Mitchell trade, but it was when the Cleveland Cavaliers were fighting to make the playoffs that first year before they went out and traded for Donovan Mitchell. And now that we know Cleveland is going to get bounced in the second round, and we kind of know that Donovan Mitchell isn't going to re-sign a contract extension with Cleveland at the end of this season, he has 1 year left on his deal, and that's kind of the time where it's like you have 1 year left on your deal, so you're basically a free agent because Cleveland's not going to risk losing him for nothing at the end of that next season, I would assume. What's interesting about Donovan Mitchell is, and this version of the Cleveland Cavaliers, is that this is their second year together, and they've made the natural progression you would come to expect from a team that drafted a bunch of young stars, added a singularly great all-star, but never offered a legitimate second all-star option around that player. Ultimately, they went as far as Donovan Mitchell could take them, and Donovan Mitchell got them to the second round of the playoffs, even without the second best player on that team in Jared Allen being available for the last 5 games of that Orlando series. But ultimately, they put all their chips into the Donovan Mitchell basket, and if Donovan Mitchell is your best player with competence, I will say, Darius Garland is a very good basketball player who has made an all-star team. Jarrett Allen is a very good basketball player who was a injury replacement for an all-star team a couple of years ago. Like, these teams are very good. These are good players. Evan Mobley probably hasn't developed into the player they want him to be, but as a number four, he's an incredibly competent basketball player. I say all of this to say, if Donovan Mitchell is your best player and you've surrounded him with competence, second round of the playoffs was a reasonable expectation as the ceiling for that team. And if they waited out next year and all the injuries break their way, I think there's a puncher's chance they could be the third or fourth best team in the Eastern Conference. But I talked about this when Cleveland was playing Orlando before that game 7, which was that it was so interesting to watch a series where you see two teams that clearly have shortcomings, but the shortcomings make for compelling basketball because both teams are equally of shortcomings. We just don't see 7-game series like that. 7-game series between teams that are not going to win an NBA Finals or an NBA Championship. However, it's a 7-game series of two teams that clearly have defined flaws. In the case of Cleveland, struggles to get offense at a high rate. And in the case of Orlando, strong defense, not enough shooting, and ultimately against a competent defensive team, they would ultimately be good enough to, against a competent defensive team like Cleveland, Orlando would not be able to generate the offense to win. But then you look at Cleveland and you say their entire offense ran through Donovan Mitchell because at times Mobley's and the Darius Garlands did not provide the offensive firepower that they needed because those were limited offensive players compared to what's needed to be a top four or six playoff team with Donovan Mitchell as your best player. Because again, if you're making a power rankings of best players in the Eastern Conference at this point, Donovan Mitchell's somewhere like five or six. And Cleveland this year was like the fifth or sixth best team in the Eastern Conference based on who you would pick to win a championship. Like Philadelphia was the seven seed, but we know that with a healthy Joel Embiid who would have won an MVP, they clearly would have jumped Cleveland in the standings. And Miami, you could argue, could have beaten Cleveland in a seven-game series with a healthy Jimmy Butler. You know, I'm bringing those points to the table as well, is that Cleveland was somewhere in that five to six best team in the East because Donovan Mitchell was the fifth or sixth best player in the Eastern Conference. And I thought that was very interesting for Cleveland because they're a team that clearly isn't good enough, but they also now have to decide whether or not to give it one more go with Donovan Mitchell and competence and hope that they can get to an Eastern Conference Finals, or if they take a step back, accumulate picks or players, and see if they can find another path to the top. And ultimately, I think they wish Donovan Mitchell would want to re-sign an extension with them. But if Donovan Mitchell doesn't want to go back to Cleveland, I think they reevaluate their options here. And as for Donovan Mitchell himself, look, they made that man go to Utah. They made that man play 5 years with Rudy Gobert after Rudy Gobert gave him COVID at the very beginning of COVID when we were really scared of what the outcome could be and he was isolated from his family for multiple weeks at a time. Like, that man had been through a lot in his first 5 years in the NBA, and then they sent him to Cleveland where now he's got to be the adult in a room with a bunch of guys on rookie contracts who they hoped would develop into better players, but ultimately have not. They've gone through three coaches in the last 4 years. JB Bickerstaff seems to be the one that sticks, but it doesn't seem like the players particularly like him, but it looks like he's going to stick around for another year. And so it's just all has been messy for Donovan Mitchell. What I ultimately think Donovan Mitchell deserves is the chance to make $250 million on a contract where he can put up 30 shots a game on a team that goes to the play-in tournament. Ultimately, he's earned that. He has earned the chance to play for a perfectly mediocre basketball team built around him where he can just put up shots. Like the Brooklyn Nets. He's from Queens. He can go back to New York. Brooklyn doesn't have a player as good as Donovan Mitchell. If you put Donovan Mitchell with Mikal Bridges, they could maybe get to the play-in tournament, win a game or two, and get a first-round playoff series. Ultimately, Donovan Mitchell deserves that. He deserves the chance to just be the focal point of an offense, put up big numbers, and make a lot of money. We've made that man spend years toiling as the number two in Utah, now as a number one on a Cleveland team that doesn't feel like it's been very fun. We just made him play with Rudy Gobert for 5 years. Like, that dude deserves to make a lot of money playing for a team that's going to win 43 games. He has earned it. He has earned that at this stage of his career. Just give that man a lot of money to put up 32 points a game and win 43 games. Whether that's with Cleveland, whether that's with Brooklyn, wherever he may go, Donovan Mitchell's just deserved the chance to be a number one making $250 million on a five-year contract. Ultimately, that's what that man deserves. And if it's not going to be with Cleveland, I hope it's with a team like the Rockets. The Rockets might not be as fun as Brooklyn, but that man deserves to just be on a seven seed and put up a whole bunch of shots and get numbers and make a lot of money. Because Lord knows we've tried to make him the number two. We've tried to make him the number one. He's never been to a conference finals, and he's had to play in some shitty situations over his seven-year NBA career. I love Donovan Mitchell, one of my favorite NBA players, and I wish for his sake he got to just put up buckets on a team that's going to be the eight seed, and he gets to make a shit ton of money. It's what he has earned it. He has earned it. He has gone the hardest possible route to making it to free agency. And God damn it, I hope that he makes a bunch of money. And for Cleveland, I hope they get one more run where they can maybe make the conference finals next year, although they're probably going to have to go out and trade for a legitimate bona fide all-star, like I don't even know who would be available this summer to make it work for them. Or if they're going to trade Donovan Mitchell, I said this a couple weeks ago, man, but New Orleans, flip CJ McCollum and some draft picks. Go get Donovan Mitchell. See if that works. Or if Brandon Ingram's the one they're going to trade, I don't know how Donovan Mitchell and CJ McCollum would work together, but man, go flip Brandon Ingram for Donovan Mitchell. The Cleveland should pay Brandon Ingram, not necessarily a max, but they should pay Brandon Ingram a whole bunch of money. Get him, Darius Garland, Jared Allen together. They could make a 7 or 8 seed in the Eastern Conference while they pivot to try and find their next superstar player. Cleveland should absolutely go out and flip Donovan Mitchell for Brandon Ingram. 1 year left on Ingram's contract, 1 year left on Mitchell's contract. New Orleans wants to just go all in on one season to see if Zion and Donovan Mitchell and CJ McCollum can work out. For Cleveland, they can sign Brandon Ingram, a slightly lesser skilled player than Donovan Mitchell, to a long-term extension, because Brandon Ingram will be willing to sign a long-term extension with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Yeah, Cleveland absolutely should go out and flip Donovan Mitchell for Brandon Ingram or Donovan Mitchell for CJ McCollum. Portland should try and make a 1-year run with Donovan Mitchell and Zion Williamson together and see how that works, because I think that team could make a top 4 seed in the Western Conference. Maybe Donovan Mitchell won't re-sign with New Orleans, but they should still give it a 1-year run just to see what could happen if they put Donovan Mitchell and Zion Williamson together for a playoff run, because they might be able to mess around and get a top 4 seed in the West, and if injuries break their way, maybe they could make it to the conference finals with Zion and Donovan Mitchell and CJ McCollum and Herb Jones and Trey Murphy and all those guys. That would be my ideal scenario if I were them, but, you know, we'll see what ends up happening there. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here to the Take It Easy podcast. We've got episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday coming at you. And we are very excited for more playoff basketball that we will be breaking down in the coming days. Leave a 5-star review, downloads, any and all support is greatly appreciated. And we appreciate you deciding to stop in however and whenever it is you may be listening. We will talk to you again tomorrow, and in the meantime, take it easy.